Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the Mishnah that you'll find 8 lines from the top of Daf Chofov. Before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, Mahu Kosher Lemitzvas Shofar. What kind of animal horn is acceptable for the mitzvah of shofar? Kol ha-shofros sherim, the Mishnah says. All shofars are acceptable, and when the Mishnah uses the term shofar, we can refer to that as animal horns. Chutz mishel pora, with the exception of a cow horn, b'pnei shehu keren. It is referred to by the term keren, with regard to Rosh Hashanah, we know that we require something called a shofar. So the different term is what determines the halacha. The fact that the pora is called, the pora horn is called keren, as opposed to the term shofar, according to this opinion, the cow horn, therefore, is considered inadmissible. Rabbi Yossi, Omar Rabbi Yossi, Valo kol ha-shofros nikru keren. Rabbi Yossi claims that anything that's called a shofar is also called a keren, so that they're interchangeable terms. So from the fact that the cow horn is called keren, will not exclude it from being acceptable. And how does Rabbi Yossi know that they're interchangeable terms? Shenemar b'mshoich b'keren ha-yovel. Now, a yovel, we'll see later in the Gemara, is a ram. And everyone accepts that the ram horn is acceptable as a shofar. And yet the pasuk refers to the ram's horn as a keren, showing us that they are interchangeable terms. The Gemara is impressed with Rabbi Yossi's point. Shapir ko'omar Rabbi Yossi. Shapir means says well. He says that he makes a strong point. So why then is the cow horn excluded from the mitzvah of shofar according to the first opinion in the Mishnah? So the Gemara responds, V'rabonon, they will answer back, Kol ha-shofros ikru shofar v'ikru keren. Udepora keren ikri shofar lo ikri. It is true that all other shofars could be referred to by the term keren. With regard to all other shofars, they are interchangeable. All shofars would be called a shofar and can also be called a keren. However, when it comes to the pora, there it's referred to by the term keren and not referred to by the term shofar. Dechtiv, the pasuk says, Bechor shoroi hodar loi v'karnei rieim karnov. The shor is the same type animal as a pora, we would say a cow. And the pasuk refers to it specifically as a keren, and not by the term shofar. Before we go further, we must say a word about Gemara structure. On the side of the Gemara, you see we have a nosei mivne heading, where we feature a diamond. We also feature Roman numerals 1 through 3. Now, if you scan ahead on this page, you will notice diamonds, and along the right-hand side of the Gemara text, you'll notice diamonds with Roman numerals in them, 1 through 3, going down the page of Gemara. What do these represent? So we've noted here on the side, these are te'amim, reasons, l'shitas harabonan, the poislim keren shalpora, reasons for the first opinion of the Mishnah, the opinion of the Rabbonon that render inacceptable the horn of a cow. So the first approach is a, we'll call it a scriptural approach, that says that the Porah horn is never referred to by the term shofar. It's referred to exclusively by the term keren. The Gemara continues, V'Rabbi Yossi Omar Loch, Rabbi Yossi will respond. Now, Rabbi Yossi is not rendering unfit the cow horn. So what does he say? He says, Depora Nami Ikri Shofar. We will show you that a cow's horn is also referred to by the term shofar, Dichtiv. Posuk in Tehillim says, V'sitav Lashem Mishor Par. And on the side, we have this posuk from Tehillim, Tehillim Perek Samach Tes Posuk Lamed Beis, V'sitav Lashem Mipor, Mishor Par, Makrin Mafris. The gist of the posuk is that the Almighty loves, finds favor in my prayers more than a Shor Par. A Shor is an ox. It's also a reference to an animal that's a cow that's a year old. A par is a reference to a cow that's 3 years old. So the pasuk itself requires a little explanation. Im shor loma par. If Hashem is saying that I like your prayers more than a shor, why does the pasuk mention a par? Im par loma shor. And if it's a reference to a cow, then why does it mention a shor? Elo my Shor par. What do the words mishor par mean? So it means mishofar. And the Rashash points out that the resh in the word shor is often a letter that seems to be vestigial. In other words, that you can make a word up with the resh and without the resh. The resh, and he goes through several examples of words where you find the resh is dropped. So if you look at the word mishor par and you take the resh out of the word shor, you really are seeing mishofar. So there's a remez, there's a hint in this pasuk that the cow's horn is referred to also by the term shofar. V'rabbonan. The Rabbona, what do they say about this posuk? The posuk that Rabbi Yossi just demonstrated to his satisfaction, that you combine shor par into the word shofar. Rabbonan, who don't agree with that, kid Rav Matana. Well, they will explain like Rav Matana does. Diom Rav Matana, my shor par. What does the word shor? What do the word shor par in this posuk mean? Shehu Godoyol Kipar, that the shor referred to in the pasuk is a reference to the shor at the time of creation, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the different animals, creatures of the world, he created them in a full adult size. For example, Adam and Eve, when they were created, they weren't created as babies that were swaddled in diapers. They were created as complete, full human beings. So to the shor, even though a shor, when it's born, on the day it's born, it's called, it's also, the term shor is also applicable, when the shor of creation was made, it was made as if it were a par, a complete adult animal. Ulo Omar. And you can see a Roman numeral number 2, and we saw before this is a second explanation for why the Rabbonon exclude a cow's horn to serve as a shofar. Hainu taimo de Rabbonon. The basis of their reason is kid Rav Chisto, like Rav Chisto teaches. And before we continue, we should note on the side what we're going to see. We have a tat nose and a hemshech. In other words, we have a subtopic, because we're in the topic of the reasons behind the Rabbanan Shita, and this is a continuation, and the Mivneh. We also have a structural note. The structural note will be of primary significance when we go a couple lines more in the Gemara to a bracketed section. So, in the meantime, we'll read ahead a few lines of Gemara. The reason behind the Rabbanan of the Mishnah that exclude a cow's horn is like Rav Chisda's teaching. The Amar Rav Chisda, Bepnei ma ein ha-kayin god, ein kayin godol nichnas, bevigdei zahov, lifnei ulifnim la'avoid avoida. Why is it that on Yom Kippur, the high priest, the kayin godol, does not wear his customary golden clothing, sometimes referred to as the Shmoyne Begodim, that when on Yom Kippur, there is a special ceremony where he goes into the inner sanctum where the Holy Ark, where the Aron HaBris is located, for Avodas Yom HaKippurim, for the Yom Kippur service. When he goes in there, he wears four white linen clothing as opposed to the eight standard golden Kohen Gadol clothing. Why is that? So the reason for that is, Lefi She'ein Kategor Na'ase Sanegor. A kategor is a prosecutor. It cannot be that that entity that serves as prosecution can then serve as sanegor, a defense. And to make this a little more, we'll call it practical sounding, the gold is associated with the golden calf, with the Egel Hazov. And that was a source of condemnation, of prosecution against the Jewish people. And being that gold is associated with the Egel Hazov, the golden calf, that same material cannot be used to form the those clothing that are going to be used on Yom Kippur for the defense, for the prayers on behalf, for the prayers and the ceremonies on behalf of, for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. The prosecution gold, that is, cannot turn into a defense. So Rav Chisda explains why, and then with that explanation, Ula is adopting Rav Chisda, and he's using that to explain why we don't use a cow's horn. So briefly said, a cow, we should emphasize, is the same thing as an egel, a calf. A calf is a young cow, so we don't want to use on Rosh Hashanah the kategor, the calf horn, the cow's horn, because it's associated with the Egel Hazov, which was the prosecutor. So the prosecutor, the Egel Hazov, the cow, cannot turn into the defender, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah to serve as a means of defense, of prayer on behalf of Klal Yisrael. At this point, we have a bracketed section. If we skip it momentarily, the Gemara asks what I would say is the obvious question: the ha tana mitnei shu keren komar. The Mishnah gave a reason already. Not didn't mention kategornas ein kategornas sanegor. The Mishnah, which is we'll say a more authoritative and earlier source, already gave a reason that the shofar's horn, according to the Rabbanan, is called a keren and is not called a shofar. And the Torah requires for Rosh Hashanah that you use a shofar. So why this alternative reason? Doesn't the Mishnah, we'll say, preclude this reason? The Gemara will answer after the brackets, Chada v'oid komar. In fact, the Mishnah has both in mind. Chada, the ein kategor nasa sanegor. First and foremost is this principle. Maybe you call it a logical principle, that which is of a prosecution, condemnatory nature, cannot then serve as a defense. The Oid, and the second reason that the Mishnah spells out, or that we saw in the Mishnah, where it's called a Karen, Mipnei Shuhu Karen. It's called a Karen and not a shofar, according to the Rabbanan. So what we just did is we presented the second approach to the Shitas HaRabbanan. We skipped the section of Gemara, and now it's time to go to study the Gemara structure. You probably saw a number of different shapes that we haven't explained yet. In the bracketed section, there is a use of a trapezoid shape, and following that, you saw a crown shape. We glance at the side of the Gemara, and we indicate as follows: the mivneh, the structure, besocha sograim, within the brackets. There is a diyun, a discussion, bedivrei Rav Chisda, lama biyom kippur, ein kohen gadol nichnas lifnei lifnim bevigdei zahav. Why is it that the kohen gadol doesn't go into the inner sanctum wearing on Yom Kippur the golden garments? And the Gemara answers, mishum she'ein kategor nas sanegor. The prosecution cannot turn into the defense. V'zeh muvokan al yedei ula. This is brought in the Gemara by ula kehesber l'rabona loma ein toikin bekeren shelpar. Why we don't use the horn of a cow, as explained, ein kategor nas sanegor. Within the bracketed section, there is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth discussion. The volcano shape, the trapezoid, the narrow part facing upwards, kushios. And when you see our volcano shape inverted, that represents tshuvos, responses. The crown shape that appeared right after the brackets, that's also explained on the side of the Gemara under our mivneh heading, the ha'tana. These are kushios. These represent questions al ula v'abaye. Abaye, we note behemshech. Eich yitochen shehein noisnim hezberim l'rabonon sheposlu keren poro. How is it that they can give hezberim for the rabonon that excluded a cow's horn, bizman shamishna atzmo mefareshes tam ha'rabonon, when the Mishnah itself gives an explanation for the rabonon? And you can see with the markings that we've emphasized the expression chara v'od ka'omar. In other words, both Ula and Abaye acknowledge the Mishnah's reason, but they both say that the Mishnah had an intention to give its reason and had in mind their additional reason as well. And that, you can see, we've emphasized with a dashed underlining, Chada v'od ka'omar, both in under Ula, now the Roman numeral number 2, and also you see this under Roman numeral number 3, where the same structure appears. Okay, now let's go back to the bracketed section. We introduced through Rav Chisda the concept of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor as a reason why on Yom Kippur the Kohen Gadol doesn't wear the golden garments into the inner sanctum. And Ula says, well, that's the same reason, Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, that we don't use a cow's horn, the cow being reminiscent, reminds us of the Egel Hazav. The Gemara asks, "Veloi, is that really so that this concept is a binding of Ein Kategor Nasis Anegor? Vo'ikod dam par. On Yom Kippur itself, we use cow's blood, and again, when we see cow, we associate that with the Egel. We use cow's blood for the Yom Kippur inner sanctum service. We sprinkle the blood in the Kodesh HaKodoshim. So using cow's blood for atonement purposes." The Gemara answers, Hayol the Ishtini Ishtini. Ishtini means it's undergone a change. Rashi explains, Hayol the Ishtini, Liyos Dam, you're dealing with blood. Blood is a liquid that's in a vessel. The Ein Maris Hapar Nikur. There's no recognition that this is a cow. So, therefore, it's okay. It's not any longer occupying the capacity of a prosecutor. Question. Voiko aroin v'kapoires ukruv. Is it not so that the holy ark, the oron, the kapoires, the cover of the holy ark, and the kruv, which were images or figures of angelic babies or children on the top of the Aron, the Kruvim, they were all made of a solid piece of gold. So we see in the inner sanctum the presence of gold. Is this not a challenge to the concept of Ein Kategonasa Sanegor? The Gemara answers, it's a little bit of a cryptic answer, but the Gemara answers, Chote Bal Yakriv Kor Minon. What we are objecting to, as Rashi says, Chote Bal Yakriv, Ha'odom Lo Yakrivenu Haloim. Haloim means unto here. Shehu Chotobo. We don't want a person, in this case the Kohen Gadol, wearing the golden vestments. When the Kohen Gadol, he is a person, it is people that sinned through the gold. So we don't want the person coming back now with the gold in a sanegor capacity. Question. Voiko kafu machto. Well, there's a censer and a pan made of gold that was used on Yom Kippur for bringing the keturas into the Kiddush HaKadoshim. And here you have a person bringing them into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. And they're made of gold. Doesn't that violate the principle of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor? The Gemara answers, in a more accurate explanation of what our objection is, it's Choyte Bal Yisnoe Ko Aminon. We don't want the sinner to come in a beautified fashion using that material through which the sin was accomplished. And that's why we don't want him wearing golden clothing. Yisnoe means it has to do with beautification. The Gemara asks, Vo'iko bigdei zohov mibachutz? Is there not the wearing of the golden garments while he's doing the sacrificial service outside of the inner sanctum in the temple courtyard? So is there not a problem with that as far as Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor? The Gemara responds, Mibifnim kwaminon. Our only objection is where it's being used in the inner sanctum. The Gemara asks, well, according to Ula, we weren't using the shofar because of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, but isn't that outside? That's not something that you trumpet away in the inner sanctum, and yet we do object. Shofar nami mi bachutz hu. The Gemara answers, Kevon de lezikoron hu kebifnim domi. Since the shofar is used to arouse the memory of the Jewish people in the eyes of the Almighty, it has the same status as an inner sanctum type entity. So therefore, Ula is justified in saying that we don't use the according to Rabbanan in the Mishnah, Ula is explaining them why we don't use the cow's horn. That being based on Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, the prosecution cannot convert into the defense. The Gemara asks, V'ho Tano Mipnei Shu Keren Komar. The Tano gave a different reason why a cow's horn is unacceptable, simply because it's not referred to by the term shofar. The Gemara answers, that too is correct. Chado V'oid Komar. The Mishnah has as its intention to give this reason and another reason. Chado, the Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. One point being that the prosecution does not turn into the defense. The Oid, and furthermore, Mipnei Shu Keren, because it is called a Keren. The cow's horn is a Keren and not a shofar. Now, Rabbi Yossi responds point for point. Rabbi Yossi Omarloch, number one. The Ko Amris Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, that which we accept this concept of the prosecution doesn't turn into the defense, Hani Mili Mibifnim. That's true with regard to activities done in the inner sanctum. Vahai Shofar Mibachutsu, the shofar is not an inner sanctum activity. You can see that Rabbi Yossi doesn't accept the the Svara of Kivan de Lizikoron, who, as was mentioned before. Uda Koamas, point number two, and that which you said, Bibneshu Keren, that the cow's horn is called a Keren, Kol Hashayforos Nami Ikru Keren. All kosher shofars, all acceptable shofars, are also termed Keren. So the fact that something is called Keren cannot be exclusionary. A Roman numeral number three, Abaye Omar, Hainu Tamayu de Rabbonon. Shofar Om Rachmana. The Torah uses the word shofar, which is in the singular, V'loi Shnaim U'Shloisha Shofros, and not two or three shofars, not in the multiple. V'ha Depora, the cow's horn, the physical nature of the cow's horn, is that it is layered. Layer upon layer of material that form the cow's horn. Kevon dekoy gildi gildi, that's the idea that we expressed before in terms of layers. So mischazi, it appears kishnayim ushlosha shofaros. You might say it's a concentric horn formation. So that it's a type, maybe you might view it as telescoping, that you could actually take out from within the cow's horn several layers of horns, one set in the other. So as far as Abaye is concerned, it's a grammatical, scriptural reason for excluding a cow's horn. Shofar in the singular, it's scriptural because shofar appears in the Torah, and the grammatical element is that it's in the singular, thereby excluding the cow's horn. The Gemara asks, V'ha Tano b'pneishu keren komar. The Tano gave a different reason, and that's because the cow's horn is referred to by a different term. It's referred to as a keren, not a shofar. The Gemara answers, Chada v'ol komar. But I will tell you that the Mishnah had in mind two reasons. Chada, the shofar echod omar rachmona v'lo shnayim u'shlosha shofros. One is the reason that I just gave, that the Torah insists on one shofar to be used in fulfillment of the Rosh Hashanah mitzvah and not multiple shofros. V'od mipnei shehu keren. And the second reason being that the cow's horn is called a keren and not a shofar. Rabbi Yossi Omar Lach, and Rabbi Yossi once again responds point for point. He will tell you, number one, the Koam is shofar echad amrachmona v'lo shnayim u'shlosha shofros. That which you said, that the shofar of the Torah is a singular and not multiple. Kevon de michbiriadadi, since these concentric horns are essentially, they might be layers, but they're attached to one another. You can't, when you cut a cow's horn off of its head, you're not going to slip out of their several shofars. They're all attached to one another. So chad hu, it has the status of singularity. Udeko amris mitneishu keren, and that you mentioned that it is called a keren and not a shofar. Well, kol hashofros nami ikru keren. All acceptable shofars are referred to by the term keren. They're interchangeable, and therefore the fact that a cow's horn is called keren doesn't exclude it. As you can see, we have a slash mark. This indicates that the continuation of the Gemara is really a new trend of thought. There is a point of connection to that which we had before. We use an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, which you can align with an arrow you see way above. And that's a reference to the word yovel that we saw in the Mishnah. And this was brought as Rabbi Yossi's proof that all other shofars that we considered acceptable for shofar, the Torah will use the term keren in that context as well. And how did it prove it? It quoted a pasuk in Yoshua, in Sefer Yoshua, Perek Vav, pasuk He, that said, Bimshoch bekeren hayovel. Now, a yovel, there was an assumption, or there's an understanding that means a ram. And the ram's horn, of course, everyone's familiar with the expression, the ram's horn, that's the shofar of Rosh Hashanah. It's called in the Torah, and in the Sefer Yoshua, it's called a keren. So now, the Gemara. The Gemara, in this section, is also introduced, we should note, by a topic heading. We have a topic heading, the nose and a mivne, a structural note. Well, the topic we call biurei milim. Also, we note that the structure that we'll be adopting here continues on to Amud Beis. So the gist of this section of Gemara, which is actually a fairly long section, you'll see that it continues till the Mishnah, a little more than halfway down Amud Beis, biurei milim. We're going to be explaining words. The double underline will introduce the expression kishalachti le. We see a number of different rabbonim and stories where they went to certain foreign locations, and in the house shape that you see, milim she'enom shigratim, unusual words. She'en shigra means that which is common. So, enom shigratim is a reference to words that are not common. And the squiggle underline will be used to highlight pirush hamilim, the explanation of the word. So if we scan the Gemara ahead of time, you'll see unusual, in the houses, you'll see unusual words. Yuvla, Galmuda, Kshita, Kira, Nymphi, Sechvi. And on Amud Beis, you'll notice also the house marking continues at the top of Amud Beis, of Chof of Amud Beis. You have the word Kavon and Sirugin, Chalugloigois, Salsila, Vitati Siob and Matate, and Yehovacha. All of these are unusual words. What do they mean? So as we go through the Gemara, we'll see the respective explanations. The Gemara. My mashma dahai yuvla lishna de dichrohu. Where do you see that the word yuvla, like we had in the Mishnah, the Pasuk Yovel, is a reference to a dichra. Dichra is a ram. Technically speaking, dichra, if you look at the root of the word, dalid chof resh, the three-letter root, the dalid in Aramaic can be interchanged with the Hebrew zayin. And that's a much more familiar word, zachar, male, as opposed to nekeva. And a ram is a male sheep. So that the word dichra is a reference to, even though technically speaking it means a male, it also means a ram. So from where do we see that the word yovel is a reference to a ram? This sanya, Omar Rabbi Akiva, we have a teaching in which Rabbi Akiva says, Shalachti laravya, when I went to Arabia, hoyu koirin ledichra, they would refer to their rams by the term yuvla. It's interesting to note that this is not the only place in Shas, but you see from time to time words that we find in our holy scriptures, which we might refer to as the original, the authentic Hebrew. Some of those words, it appears they fell out of disuse amongst the Jewish people, but those words were maintained by other nations as part of their language, so that even though we stopped referring to rams at a certain point by the term yovel, even though it appears in the Nach, nevertheless, other nations preserved that word. And hence, you can see in Arabia, they continued to refer to their rams by a Tanakh word, yuvla. The Omar Rabbi Akiva, kishalachti legalya, when I went to Galya, hoikurin linida, they refer to a menstruant woman as Galmuda. My Galmuda. What is the basis of that word Galmuda? So it's really a contraction of two words, Gemula, Da, Mibaila. Even though in the original word, the Lamed, precedes the Mem, Galmuda, and here in Gemula, the Mem precedes the Lamed, that's considered, etymologically speaking, an acceptable form. Even in Hebrew, you find the word kesev and keves, a reference to a sheep, and the sin and beis can interchange. So, what does galmuda mean? How does that reflect upon? How does that refer to a menstruant woman? So, as is well known, when a woman is experiencing her monthly cycle, so she distances herself from her husband. And as a result of that, the word gemula, gemula means separated from. Gemula da, da means she is separated from Mibala, from her husband. V'yomer Rabbi Akiva, kishalachti lafriki, sounds very much like Africa. Hoyukurin lemo'o ksita. The coin that we refer to as a maw, they use the word ksita. Lamai nafkamina, what bearing does that have for us? Lefrushi, it helps us to explain a posuk in the Torah, mea ksita doraisa. The Torah says that 100 ksita were used to pay for it, and that means mea danki. Now the word danki, technically speaking, is a sixth. The maw is a coin that's the sixth of a larger coin, if I'm not mistaken, of a dinar. So it's a sixth. It's referred to by that term. And mea 100 danki, which equals the same. It's the same thing as saying mea maw. So that the Torah word ksita is, its meaning is preserved by another nation, by the African nation. Omar Rebbe, kishalachti lekarchayayam. Up till now, we didn't note it with markings, but up till now, all of the stories of when I went to were Rabbi Akiva stories, and now we have another story involving someone else. Omar Rebbe, kishalachti lekarchayayam. When I went to the cities overseas, hoyu korin lemechira kira. They referred to sales by the word kira, lamainaf gemina, for what? What difference does that make for us? What bearing does that have for us? Lefrushi, to help us explain the posuk that says Asher Korisi Li. And now we know that Asher Korisi means that I purchased for myself. Omar Reb Shimon ben Lokish, kishalachti litchum kan nesharia. So Reish Lakish went to this the area of Kan Nesharia, Hayukurin Lakala Ninfi Ulitarnagol Sechvi. They referred to a bride by the word Ninfi and a chicken by the word Sechvi. And the Gemara explains, Lakala Ninfi, that a Kala is called Ninfi, my crawl. What is the posuk that would serve as a basis for the word Ninfi as a reference to a bride? Answer, Yefei Noif Mesois Kol Haaretz. This pasuk refers to that which is beautiful. And, as is often the case, a bride is dressed and adorned to look beautiful. So the word Ninfi, if you have a good etymological imagination, you see in the word Ninfi, Yefei Noif. And that you can see by manipulating the letters in the word Ninfi, you see the Yud, and if you skip the second Nun, you see the word Yefei, and Nof, Nun Pei, in that word as well. Yefei Nof, that which is a beautiful sight. Ula Tarnagol, the Gemara continues, Sechvi. A Tarnagol is referred to as Sechvi. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. The boy same, another version by way of names is Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, my crawl. What's the pasuk that through which we can make a connection between the Tarnagol and the word Sechvi? So the pasuk says, Mishos betuchos chochma, omi nosan la Sechvi bina. And the Gemara explains this pasuk. Mishos betuchos chochma, who placed in the tuchos chochma, elu klos. That's a reference to the kidneys. There's a lot of depth to this. How chokhmah is associated with kidneys. One is what's the connection? A kidney is an anatomical organ, and chokhmah has to do with wisdom. So one might explain that the function of the kidney is to purify the. It helps to purify the blood where there's a separation between that part of the fluid is beneficial for the body, and then there is the refuse, the part that's rejected. So it's separation process where the good is accepted and the injurious is rejected. So too, wisdom involves the ability to make distinctions, to separate between that which is important and that which is insignificant. And by the way, that's a reason why you find the Havdalah of Saturday night is placed in that first bracha, the first weekday bracha of the Shemoneh Esrei, the Havdalah being the ability to separate between the holy and the mundane, or the holy and the profane. It has to do with an element of Chochmah. That first bracha of the weekday Shemoneh Esrei, Atochoinei L'Odom Das, is a bracha that features, that emphasizes the Almighty as the provider of human wisdom. The, again, separation, the ability to separate the kernel from the chaff, the important from the insignificant, from the holy, from the profane, from the mundane, all involves wisdom. So the pasuk continues, and we quote this on the bottom line of the Gemara, Oy mish nosan lasechvi bina, who gave the sechvi bina, ze tarnagoyl. Rashi says, sechvi loshen ri'ya, to be able to see something. Now, the chicken, we associate it with he who sees the light, and it reacts, it makes noise, it cackles when dawn approaches. So it has this element of wisdom that it notices and it responds to a change from night into day, an expression of a type of wisdom. Levi Ikla Lahu Asra. Levi arrived at a certain place. It's similar almost to the expression Kishalachti, I went to a certain place. So Levi went to a certain place. Also Gavro Lekameh, a man came to Levi. Omerle. And the man said to Levi, Kov on, we're at the top of Omid Beis, Kov on Planya. Lo havi yoda mai komale. And Levi didn't know what the man was saying. Also Shoyal Bay Midrasha. So Levi went to the Beis Medrash, the place where Torah is studied, and sought out assistance. How am I to understand this man? Omru Le, so they said to him, the members of the Beis Medrash said to Levi, Gazlun Omar Loch. The man is complaining that so-and-so stole from him. So the man was saying, Rashi says at the top, Gazlani Ploni. That means I was robbed by so and so. Tichtiv, as the pasuk says, Haikova Odom Elokim. And in the context of that pasuk, which continues, you can see that there's a reference to stealing, to theft. The pasuk itself says, "Can man steal from God?" And the pasuk says, "Well, yeah, and he can, in the sense that he withholds tithes that he is expected to give to others. That's a form of stealing from the Almighty." Omale Rava mi Barnish le Rav Ashi, Rava from Barnish, name of a place. He says to Rav Ashi, "I havoi hosam, had I been over there." In Levi's position, where I was presented with a word that I didn't know, well, I would have come to its meaning through my own efforts. Have amino le, I would have said to the man, using the unknown expression, the word which for Levi wasn't known, he still would use it in the following series of questions. I would have said, Hechi kavoch. Well, how did he kavo you? B'mai kavoch. Through what did he kavo you? V'amai kavoch. Why did he kavo you? So, after asking this man the questions and hearing his responses, u'memei l'havi adana, I would have figured out what had happened to him. So now, that sounds like a good idea. That's Rava's from Barnish's suggestion. V'ihu Levi Savar Milsa de Isura Ko'omarle. Levi thought that what the man was referring to was a matter of something that's either permissible or forbidden, and not lending itself to a series of questions involving actions. Now we continue with a new series, but having the same theme, and that is of words that were unknown. And on the side, under our Mivne heading, we've highlighted this double underlining, Lo Havu Yadi Rabbonan. We're going to see a number of cases where the rabbis didn't know the meaning of a particular word, and they revealed its meaning through the bondmaid that served in the house of Rebbe. She is known as Amsa Debei Rebbe, a woman, a personality that you find elsewhere in the Shas. So our Gemara continues, Lo Havu Yadi Rabbonan, my Sirugin. They didn't know what the word Sirugin meant, and this is a word that you find in the Mishnayos. Rashi makes reference to it in the context of the reading of the Megillah on Purim. Kora Sirugin. So what does Sirugin mean? Shamua la'amsa debei Rebbe. They heard the bondmaid of Rebbe's household, Rebbe, Rabbi Judah the Prince, Rebbe Yudah Nossi, and this woman that worked in his house. They heard the following. D'chazasinhu rabbonon, d'havu aili paski paski. She saw the rabbonon going into Rebbe's house. Let's just imagine they were going into to have a meal in Rebbe's house, and she had to serve them. And they were entering paski paski. Rashi says lifrokim she'enu nichnasim yachad. They came in drips and drabs. They came in not all together, and that makes that poses a difficulty to one who wants to serve a group of people, where they aren't arriving all at once or all together. Omra luhu. So she said to them, ad mosai atem nichnasim sirugin sirugin. Until when are you going to continue this way of entering in a fragmented way? So that now they would understand the Mishnah Megillah, that the Megillah, if it's read in sections, not all at once, is one continuum. Read and then a gap, and then more reading, and then a gap. We continue in our Gemara. Lo havu yadi rabbonan mai chalug loy gois. Again, we should emphasize we have the house marking for the unusual word, and the squiggle underline will highlight the definition. So they didn't know what chalug logos were. Yumachad, one day, shamua la'amsa debei Rebbe, they heard the bondmaid of Rebbe's household, dechozis lahu gavra, she saw a man, dekomivader parfichinya. He was scattering or separating parfichinya. And parfichinya is a type of vegetation. Rashi gives a French word for it as well. Omro le, she said to this man, ad mosai ato mefazer chalug loigicha. And here you have the word that they didn't know, but they were able to associate now the word with an item, the parfichinya. Lo havu yadi rabbonan mai salsalos ramameka, a posuk. There's a word in the posuk, and they didn't know what the word salsala meant. Now, this posuk is stated in the context of Torah study. So, Usrameka means it will raise you up. But what does salsala mean? Yumachad shamuel amsa debe Rebbe. One day they heard the bondmaid of Rebbe's household, the havis omra luhu gavra. She said to a man that have come a hapich besare. It was a man that was flipping around his hair on his head. So he was flipping it around and searching through his hair. Amale, she said to him, ad mosata mesalsel besarecha. So you see the word mesalsel or salsalal that we saw in the pasuk. So it's this action. Now we go look. We can now look in Rashi salsala chipus v'hafach b'matmoinim shel Torah. In the context of Torah, it has to do with just like one who who flips through his hair, runs his fingers or a comb through his hair. In the context of Torah, it has to do with Torah study, searching within the depths of Torah in order to reveal its secrets. The Gemara continues, Lo havu yadi rabbonan mai v'tatasiyah b'matate hashmeid. So, what does this word v'tatasiyah or metate mean? Yumachad shamuel amso debay Rebbe. One day they heard the Rebbe, bondmaid of Rebbe's house, to have his omro lechaverta. She was saying to her friend, Shkuli tatisa v'tate besa. Take your broom and sweep out your house. So the word v'tatasiyo in this pasuk on Yeshaya is a reference to being swept out. The pasuk itself speaks about destruction. Lo havu yadi rabbonon mai hashlech al Hashem Yehovecha v'hu yichalkalecha. Cast upon Hashem Yehovecha. Now this word is not clear what it means, and He will support you. Omar Rabo Barachana Yumachad Hava Azilno Bahade Utaya. Rabo Barachana, who is actually featured in Maseches Bava Basra in stories like this, where he tells us about his travels. So he says, one day I was walking along with an Ataya. Ataya is an Arab. Hava Darino Tuna, and I was carrying a bundle. The Omar Lee and the Arab that was accompanying, that I was accompanied by, he said, Shkol Yehovecha v'shadi agamloi. Take your Yehovecha. Here's that the word that we didn't know, but in this context it was clear, is take your package and shadi and place it upon my camel. So the Arab was offering Rabbi Barachana assistance by relieving him of his burden by placing it on the Arab's camel. So that the pasuk then means that you should cast your burdens upon the Almighty, and He will support you. In other words, when one acknowledges that the Almighty is the one who ultimately bears our burdens and supports us and assists us, then He will in fact do so by our casting upon Hashem our burdens. We continue with the new Mishnah, and on the side we have a topic heading, Shofar Shel Rosh Hashanah, the shofar that we use on the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, Ta'aniyos are public fast days. They are associated primarily with situations of drought, where after the rainy season sets in but no rain appears, so public fast days are declared. And during those public fast days, there is part of the prayer service involves shofar blowing. The term Yovel will appear in this sugya. Yovel is a reference to the Jubilee year. However, in our context, it refers specifically to Yom Kippur of the Yovel year. According to most opinions, the Yovel is ushered in on Yom Kippur, during which time there is a series of trumpetings, of shofar blasts, and actually the shofar that's blown on Yovel, which signifies the freeing of slaves and the return of purchased lands to their original owners, this is all announced through a shofar blowing, which is actually quite reminiscent of the Rosh Hashanah shofar blowing. Trua, Tkiyas and Truos, etc. We will see in Machlokas Tanoim, we'll see a Tanaic controversy, Mosai Boinon Shel Yoel Poshut, O Shel Ayol Kofuf. There are different kinds of animal horns. There is the horn of a Yoel, a type of animal, and its horn is a straight type horn. The ayol, the ram's horn, is a bent type horn. So when is a yoel, or we can say the straight one, used? When is the bent one used? And as we said, this issue we'll find to be a machlokes tanoim. As we go through the Mishnah, we'll see different opinions on this, and when we get into the Gemara, we're going to see an Amoraic opinion of Rabbi Levi, and we'll see later, we have a chart on the in the Gemara margin that sets down the three opinions regarding Rosh Hashanah versus Yovel. Now the Mishnah. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, shel Yoel Poshut. It's Yoel is the name of an animal. It's a straight horn of the Yoel. That's the Rosh Hashanah shofar. Upiv mitzupe zahav, and its mouthpiece. And here we have to be careful. We're going to see some more detailed explanations of where exactly this gold covering is, but just the simple literal translation, its mouthpiece is covered with gold. And we're going to discover later on in the course of the Gemara, what we're talking about in this Mishnah is what took place in the Beis HaMikdash. So in the Beis HaMikdash and Rosh Hashanah, the first opinion is a straight type shofar was used with a golden mouthpiece covering or coating. There were two trumpets to either side. Shofar marich v'chatzotzos mekatzros. The shofar would be blown longer than the trumpets. In other words, there was concurrent blowing, but at the end of the blast, the shofar would continue after the trumpets, the chatzotzos, had already stopped. That's shofar marich, the chatzotzos mekatzos, shemitzus hayom shofar. The primary mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah is the blowing of a shofar. So in order to signify that, the shofar continued being blown, the continuous sound of the shofar continued beyond the trumpets. Uvetanios, when it comes to the public fast days, Bishel Zhorim Kfufim. It was a ram's horn which was bent, curved, that was used. Upihen Mitsupa Kesef, and its mouthpiece, the shofars of the Tanios were covered with were coated with silver. Ushtei Chatzotzos Be'emtzab. And here the setup was different. There were shofars to either side, and between the two shofar blowers, you had trumpeters. Shofar mekatzir v'chatzotzos marichos. The shofar would be a shorter blast. The trumpeting would be longer. Shemitzus hayom v'chatzotzos. The mitzvah, the main instrument on a public fast day, is the trumpet. And Rashi explains Shemitzus hayom b'chatzotzros. You find Rashi in the upper third of the page. The trumpeting on a public fast day is to announce the gathering, where people should gather together for prayer. And the instrument used for gathering is a trumpet. Dechtiv, posuk in the Torah says, "Vahayu l'cha l'mikra edo." This posuk is in the context of the trumpets that Moshe Rabbeinu made, and they will be for summoning together the community. So up till now, we've seen Rosh Hashanah, Tanios, and now we see Yovel mentioned. And that's why in the Mishnah markings, we have an Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. Aleph for Rosh Hashanah, Beis, Tanios, and Gimel, now Yovel. Shove Yovel Rosh Hashanah. Yovel, which is Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, is compared to Rosh Hashanah. There's a Gzeirah Shava, according to the Tanakhama, a word comparison in the Torah that enables us to connect Rosh Hashanah to Yovel. L'tkia ulebrachos. Tkia means using the straight type horns, and brachos, nine brachos that are in the Shemona Esrei, in addition to the six, the first three and last three standard brachos of every Shemona Esrei. There are three middle brachos in the Rosh Hashanah and the Yovel Shemona Esrei, making for a total of nine brachos, which, by the way, stands in contrast to the standard holiday Shemona Esrei, which is made of seven brachos, with only one middle holiday bracha. On Rosh Hashanah, we have Malchus, Zichronos, and Shofros, and Yovel had that as well. So we say that Yovel is like Rosh Hashanah with regard to Tkiah, meaning Pshutin, and we have a little number one over here to indicate that there is another opinion on this matter. Rabbi Yehuda Oimer, Rabbi Yehuda does not hold from the Gzeirah Shava, and therefore a difference. Rosh Hashanah toikim b'shel zecharim. On Rosh Hashanah, there is the bent shofar. Zecharim means literally the males, the ram's horn, which was bent, curved. Ubiyoiv lois b'shel ye'elim. And on Yom Kippur of Yovel, there would be the Yo'el, the straight type shofar. Omer Rabbi Levi, mitzvah shel Rosh Hashanah v'shel Yom HaKippurim b'kufin. So Levi points out that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is like Yovel that we saw before. One is to use the curved type shofar. V'shel Kol HaShanah b'pshutin. Kol HaShanah, the rest of the year, that's a reference to fast days that are declared. There you use the straight horn, the straight shofar. Pshutin means straight. We saw the word Yo'el being the kind of animal from which the straight shofar is produced. The Gemara asks on Levi, v'hotnan, but did not the Mishnah say shofar shel Rosh Hashanah shel Yo'el pashut? If you use the markings to prevent confusion, you can see we dashed underlined Rosh Hashanah, and we did it by Levi as well. And by Levi, we dot underlined Kfufin, and here we dot underlined Pashut. So does the Mishnah not represent a problem for Levi that the Mishnah's shofar of Rosh Hashanah was straight? Levi's Rosh Hashanah shofar was bent, was curved. The Gemara answers, Hu de Omar ki hai tana? Levi adopts the opinion of another Tana, the Tana of, we saw in the Mishnah as well, Rabbi Yehuda Desanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Barosh Hashanah, Hoyu Toikin, B'shel Zechorim, Kfufin. Ubiyovlos, B'shel Ye'elim. So Rabbi Yehuda's Rosh Hashanah shofar was Kofuf, was bent, just like Levi's Rosh Hashanah was Kfufin. Again, use the markings. You see the dashed line Rosh Hashanah, and here the dot underlined Kfufin of Rabbi Yehuda. It's the same as we saw by Levi. The Gemara asks, "V'leimo hilchaso k'Rebbe Yehuda?" Why didn't Levi take a shortcut and simply say, "V'alocha follows Rebbe Yehuda"? Would that not have led me to the desired conclusion that the Rosh Hashanah shofar shall be curved? So the Gemara answers, "You know why Levi didn't simply say hilchaso k'Rebbe Yehuda? He amrs hilchaso k'Rebbe Yehuda." If Levi would have, Paskin would have ruled like Rebbe Yehuda, I would have thought that Levi accepts Rebbe Yehuda lock, stock, and barrel, all together, entirely. Whatever Rebbe Yehuda says, I also say, including the Yovel type shofar of Rebbe Yehuda. Komash Malon, so what Levi accomplishes by not saying Hilchasuk Rebbe Yehuda, he tells me that only with regard to Rebbe Yehuda's Rosh Hashanah shofar do I, Levi, accept him. But I don't accept what he says with regard to the Yovel or the Yom Kippur shofar. So according to Levi, he's saying that the Rosh Hashanah, and you can see Levi said the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are curved ones, are kufuf. That's not what Rabbi Yehuda said. Rabbi Yehuda said, yes, the Rosh Hashanah is curved, but not the Yom Kippur, the Yovel shofar. If you look at the chart that we have on the side, we have three opinions, and we have two holidays, making for six different possibilities. And you can see on our chart, the Tanakhama holds that Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be straight, and on Yovel as well, as a result of the Gzeirah Shavah, it's going to be straight. Rabbi Yehuda says that there's a distinction, that on Rosh Hashanah it's bent, it's curved, and on Yovel it's straight. And Levi says that both Rosh Hashanah and Yovel are bent, Levi accepting the Gzeirah Shavah. However, his Rosh Hashanah, they'll say, jumping off point, is that it is curved. Now the Gemara goes on. B'mai komifli. What is the basis of the Machlokes Tanakamo and Rebbe Yehuda? The Gemara answers, Mor Savar, Rebbe Yehuda, says, Rosh Hashanah kama dekayef inish daite tfei mali. On Rosh Hashanah, which is a day of judgment, it is better for a person to be like the shofar, or the shofar to be like the person. Kayef means bent over, an expression of humility, that when being judged, the person should demonstrate his humility, and hence the shofar serves to reflect that idea. And then, hence the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is the ram's horn, which is curved. U'b'yom Kippurim, with regard to Yom Kippur, though, kama de poshet inish daite tfei mali. The Rashi explains, kama de poshet tfei odif mishum nosel avavenu el kapayim. There's an imagery here of outstretched hands. The hands are straight up. The Gemara, and that's the nature of Yom Kippur. It's a day of prayer. Umor Sovar, the Tanakama, who held that on Rosh Hashanah it is straight. Umar Sovar, b'Rosh Hashanah, kama de poshet inish daite tfei mali. The more that a person's das, his person's mindset is simple and straight, that is better. That's as far as the opinion of the Tanakhama is concerned. And the Bach adds with Yom Kippurim, Nami Deshovehu Mishum Gzera Shova, the Yom Kippur likewise is straight because of the Gzera Shova, comparing a Rosh Hashanah with Yom Kippur. Ubetanios, when it comes to the public fast days, kama de kayef inish daite tfei mali. When it comes to a fast day, which is a time of drought and prayer is needed, so an expression of humility is more desirable. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, especially in the context of accessing marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.